Welcome to the One Within All to the Interverse podcast. I'm your host, Chance Garten, and I trust that wherever you are, it's a beautiful day to praise and exalt the light of nature. In the history of this show, I've endeavored to bring the audience along with me on my journey for discovering universal truth. This type of truth with a capital T is not the wishy-washy my truth or your truth concepts that sometimes confuse feelings with facts. Nor is it the parroted and variable religious dogma known as the science trademark, which, despite its often convincing verisimilitude, tends towards wayward and wobbly notions due to erroneous philosophical foundations. The most wonderful point about authentic and universal truth is in its self-evident and eternal existence in all things, at all times, meaning that wherever you look, reality is looking back at you. And so by finding the patterns that formulate all of creation, you get to the greatest gems of all, what our wisest ancestors called gnosis. And this brings me to introduce our guest for this episode, a living man who is no stranger to the deeper side of learning and knowing, and a veritable modern alchemist, author, and herbalism teacher extraordinaire, Sage Apopum of the School of Evolutionary Herbalism. Today we'll be discussing his groundbreaking book, Evolutionary Herbalism, Science, Medicine, and Spirituality from the Heart of Nature, a work which quickly rose to the top tier of the most valuable in my collection because it speaks to the very essence of the universality of truth that I've been describing. What I love so much about this book is that rather than utilizing the ineffective educational factory model of memorization via categorization, Sage's teaching demonstrates the fractality and singularity of all life, what he calls the energetic architecture model, balancing the science and spirituality of plants and providing the keys that bridge their virtues or bridge their visible and visible worlds in order to bestow the student with intuitive abilities to recognize plant virtues far beyond what memorization of traits and Latin names could ever achieve. And if that wasn't magical enough, Sage's clinical approach to plant medicines is not your garden variety green allopathy that simply replaces chemical pharmaceuticals with active ingredient emphasis molecular herbalism. In his holistic philosophy, he treats the whole human, mind, body, and spirit, as a singular expression of the fractal cosmos, with a mindset to treat symptoms as symbols. Consider astrological and alchemical wisdom traditions, the plant-to-planet relationships, and more. You can find links to Sage's book and online courses in the episode description, and remember that by picking up a copy of this modern-day herb Bible, you'll unlock a free 5-week course and more supplemental learning materials. If you couldn't tell, I'm more than stoked to get this episode popping. So please join me in projecting a warm psychic welcome to the Sage of the Secret Fire and Supreme Spagyrist, Sage Apopum, to the show. Welcome to Interverse, man, and thanks for being here.
Wow, thanks so much for having me. That was quite the introduction. I'm like, man, maybe I should have you write my bio for me.
Get a lot of practice, you know, got to gas them up at the beginning, get everybody hooked. This is going to be a fun one, though.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I think we're going to get into some awesome stuff. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself and your work in any ways beyond, you know, my description there.
Yeah, well, I appreciate some of the things you were saying there, because, you know, a lot of my journey into herbal medicine really began with a lot of what you were talking about at the beginning there, in terms of like looking for truth. You know, for me, my kind of calling to plant medicine really stemmed from my own kind of earth-centered, nature-based spirituality and personal just seeking of knowledge. And like you said, capital T truth. What are the universal truths of this life and this earth and all these incredible traditional systems of healing and spirituality from around the world. And that ultimately kind of led me to herbal medicine. And, you know, for me, I always wanted to be a doctor, and kind of had a number of disillusioning experiences with modern medicine that kind of veered me in a different direction, brought me to the plants. And through my work with the plants, just myself personally received such healing, you know, healing in my body, healing in my heart, healing in my mind, and a deeper connection with truth, with nature, with myself. And that is really the level of healing that I wanted to be able to provide to the people that I work with, not just putting band-aids on symptoms, but really digging in, getting deep, finding those things inside of ourselves that we need to heal so that we can be whole unto ourselves, that we can be, you know, physically vital and strong, that our hearts can be open and uplifted, our minds can be clear, and that we can have a deeper connection to a sense of who we are and what this life is about and what we're here to do. And through that, I think a deeper connection with our own soul. So yeah, just a little bit about that.
Cool, man. I think that's the journey that most of the audience is on too. And I think a really great place to start to just build off of what we've said in the introduction is that I think the ancients, and really not even all that long ago, humanity had the notion of not just how to, or not just like things to know, but how to know a thing. And the how to know a thing involved the greater pattern. I mean, there's a reason why the God, the Father, you know, you Potter, that word is the same as the root for pattern. The God is in the pattern, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe we could talk about that aspect of your teaching, and particularly like the alchemist's secret fire, because I think this is where the real magic is for personal transformation and how you experience the world.
Yeah. Well, I love that you use the word pattern, because that's probably one of my favorite words ever. You know, it's funny, like, I remember back when I was in elementary school, and I remember in math, we were to be studying math, and I always was seeing these patterns, like multiplication tables. You know, I'd be like, oh, well, if you do this and you do that, it's a pattern. And if you just repeat it every time, it works. And so they ended up dubbing me the pattern king, because I'd always be raising my hand and be like, there's a pattern there. And I feel like that's really carried on into my work and my understanding of this life. And to me, everything in nature unfolds accordingly to patterns, the way from the, you know, the way the seasons turn, the way the weather is, to, you know, looking at traditional systems of cosmology, creation stories, mythologies, to herbal medicine and herbal traditions, medical traditions from around the world. A lot of the things that we see is, you know, while of course there are many differences amongst traditions of herbal medicine in terms of their materia medica and, you know, maybe their focus and orientation to healing and, you know, different therapeutic applications and treatments and things like that. When you really get down to it, though, like to the fundamentals, we find that there are universal patterns present in these medical traditions. Like, they all essentially have a recognition of the importance of the elements: earth, fire, water, air, ether. You know, of course, Chinese has a slightly different take on it with metal and wood, but there's a lot of similarities more than differences. We see that so many of these systems have some sort of triune pattern or threefold division, whether we're talking about tridosha and Ayurveda, Vata Pitta Kapha, whether we're talking about three treasures of Chinese medicine, the Dan Tian in Chinese medicine, cardinal mutable fix, the modes of astrology, to, you know, the three philosophical principles of alchemy, sulfur, mercury, and salt. There's this everywhere we look, it's like there's a holy trinity. And I started looking at these patterns and realizing at the root of it, while there's differences, there's a lot more similarity than there are differences. And that got me really interested in what are these patterns. And it kind of turned into a model that is kind of the root of my work, that I refer to as energetic architecture. That is, you know, in the cosmology and the creation of life, it occurred accordingly to a particular pattern, from, you know, the singularity and nothingness, what I think of as the prima materia, you know, the one thing that from which all things emerged, down to the duality pattern of yin and yang and celestial niter, celestial salt, purusha, prakruti, down into the elements, down into these three principles, that there's this kind of cosmological pattern of these archetypal forces of nature that are macrocosmic, but they're also microcosmic, that each individual expression of life contains this pattern of creation within it, and in varying kind of ratios and amounts. And that is what determines, you know, something's unique disposition, its constitution, its temperament. In people, you know, we see that in the shape of their body and their kind of mannerisms, their predispositions towards health and disease, strengths, weaknesses, all that kind of stuff. Even into plants, you know, why plants target certain organ systems, why they grow in certain environments, why they have certain shapes and colors and morphological characteristics, to the way they taste and the way their energetics are in affecting the ecological state of the body. We can read all of these dynamics in a person and in a plant, and through that see kind of what that plant or person's main compilation or constellation of these archetypal forces are. And that really opens up a new lens of understanding a person and a plant, because it's holistic, right? We're looking at how the part is like a fractal of the whole, how we are reflective of the whole, which is really a central concept in alchemical medicine, in Ayurveda, in Chinese medicine. They all say we are a microcosm of nature. And that is a very different model than we see in the more very mechanistic, reductionistic biomedical paradigm that is really kind of sees parts and doesn't see holes. And I think that's a main thing with the holistic approach, is we want to see the wholeness of the person, the wholeness of the plant. And I think, you know, one of the ways you kind of mentioned the secret fire, this was an interesting concept that I was taught in regards to the alchemical tradition, where they say, you know, in alchemy, fire is like the central element, you know, it is the element of transformation. The sun, being at the center of our solar system, is seen as like the central fire of which all of life orbits around, literally. But that microcosmically, we have a gravitational center within the self that we could think of as the secret fire, like our soul, essentially. And everything has a secret fire. And, you know, I think one of the aspects of the work that I do is that when we're working with a plant, when we're striving to understand a plant, that there's a balance that we have to strike in terms of studying the plants through tradition, through modern science. I tend to have a pretty all-encompassing approach. But What a lot of times gets overlooked in people studying medicinal plants is the experience, is the actual interaction with the actual plant itself. And this is how herbal medicine has been learned for a very, very long time from across the world, is from the plants themselves. And I think this experiential approach to learning botanical medicine is a critical part, because it's what takes us from just having intellectual knowledge and into a more deeper level of understanding that I think emerges more from the heart. And as we put that into practice and bring the heart and the mind, the intellectual and the intuitive, the experience and the kind of more mental learning, I think as we incorporate that and put it into practice, that's what ultimately grows into wisdom. And to me, that's kind of been my main focus, is like, I don't want to know about plants. I want to know the plants. Like, there's so many people out there using herbal medicine that they don't even know what the plant they're working with looks like, or where it grows, or what color it is, or what it smells like, or what it tastes like. Is it just eating it in a capsule or something? And that's one thing I always really strive to teach, is that when we consider a medicinal plant, the way I think of it is that you're working with the living medicinal intelligence of the earth, and it's alive. It's a life, and it's not just a natural, you know, medium for chemicals. It's a life. And I think that life deserves a degree of respect and honor and reverence. And that's why I really like to emphasize building relationships with plants while you're at the same time, you know, studying tradition and learning about them that way as well.
I love it, man. Yeah, there's a, you're getting to the spirit that's in all things with this approach. And that's the difference, is that you're interacting with these plants as if they are, as if that they're not separate or different from you. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, part of what brings healing in my experience is the act of witness. I mean, there's things like polarity therapy where the practitioner, just by putting their, you know, touch in the right places of the body, their witness to areas of the body that have been without witness for a while, allows the body to do something that it wanted to do, but it just didn't have the okay, you know, the agreement, you know, the, through that observation or perception. Or I do a practice called biofield tuning, which uses tuning forks. So I work with clients to help them resolve stuck energy in their auric field. And a lot of times, you know, it's not even something that needs to be resolved on the belief or story level or stuck energy level. It's more just like, as soon as they were aware that that emotion was stuck there, that allows it to move. So when you're bringing witness to the plants themselves, I think that that's actually capturing the spirit of what makes them medicinal in the first place, which is really cool. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about your school of evolutionary herbalism. It'd be really awesome if you could talk about the types of herbalism that you integrate in your school and how that has helped you develop the five pillars of the school.
Yeah, well, I think modern herbalism is very interesting because it stands at the crux of a transformation. And it is, you know, has been at that crux for a long time. You know, what's interesting about the Western practice of herbal medicine is that it's gone through all these identity crises over the many years. And whereas, you know, look east and you see like Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, Tibetan medicine, Kampo, Unani Tib. Like, these are systems that have been in practice, in place for a really long time. Whereas Western herbalism is like really kind of been pretty clunky. You know, it's like, oh, there's this system. And then Paracelsus comes along and it's like, no, throw that away. And then let's do this. And then that grows and turns into modern medicine. And then you have these different developments. And it's kind of like, there hasn't been like a really consistency. And I think in our modern world, what we find is that with our modern technological and informational age, we have access to information that an herbalist 100 years ago couldn't have dreamed of. And that's amazing, but it's also overwhelming. And, you know, for me, I think of that the relationship between people and plants and like the history of the herbal medicine and how humans have interacted with plants. And I think it's a really interesting thing to consider. So, you know, you think of like those first people that interacted with plants, how they learned their medicines. And I tend to think of those original kind of approaches to herbal medicine as being like a lot of our folk traditions, a lot of kind of smaller, you know, indigenous approaches to herbal medicine. A lot of them were very bioregional and varied from place to place. And then, you know, gradually throughout time, as larger geographical regions kind of shared their knowledge, we see these systems developing, right? So these are kind of when we tend to think of a system of herbal medicine, you know, Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, Galenic medicine, Yunani, which is the Middle Eastern system. You see these more kind of established approaches to materia medica, to therapeutics, to an understanding of the body. And they kind of have fundamental principles and practices attributed to them. And then, of course, throughout time, as those systems have grown and developed and as science has become more dominant, and we see more of that biomedical approach to herbal medicine, where, you know, we're understanding the chemistry of the plants and how the chemistry interacts with our chemistry and, you know, double blind placebo controlled studies and all the stuff that, you know, science is great. I mean, it has a lot to offer. I don't think it's all there is. And I don't think we should abandon tradition for the sake of science. And so for me, I feel like, you know, each of these kind of stages in the evolution of herbal medicine, there's different approaches. There's different ways of thinking, ways of seeing. You know, traditionally that we see a lot more of a spiritual integration into a model of herbal medicine, where obviously modern biomedicine doesn't believe in that woo-woo BS, which I'm just to be clear, I don't think it's woo-woo BS, but and I think right now we kind of stand at the crux of a big change in herbal medicine, which I call evolutionary herbalism, which to me is like integrating those together, right? That we can honor a folk tradition or an indigenous approach to herbs, where we're learning from the plants themselves, where we understand invisible or spiritual causes of disease, where we can honor that there is a spirit and a consciousness in the plant that we can communicate with, to, you know, the energetic or vitalist systems that recognize patterns like hot, cold, wet, dry in plants and in people, constitutional assessment with the chemistry of the herb and what science has to say about the herb, that we can bring those together, that they don't have to be conflicting. And that's really what, you know, I've strived to do in my approach to herbal medicine, is being, you know, all inclusive, I guess, and like integrative, right? And not in a way to, you know, it's not about like cultural appropriation which, by the way, herbal medicine has been cultural appropriation for thousands of years. That's how everybody learns, because herbalists share with each other, right? Like if you're here and you travel there and someone teaches you something that's useful, you're going to put it to use, right? So I think that's how herbalists have learned for a really, really long time, is through sharing of knowledge. Because as an herbalist, you just want whatever works. Like you want to know what's going to help the people that you're trying to help. So to me, the evolutionary model is really this balancing the science and the spirituality of herbal medicine, that we can really recognize both sides of that, that a lot of times people think are in opposition with one another, but I see them as two sides of the same leaf, two languages to describe the same thing. And they don't necessarily have to be in conflict. So yeah, that's kind of the way I think of, you know, and there's a lot more I could go into with all this, but, you know, that's kind of how I think of like that progression and that development of and transformation of herbal medicine, and how humans and plants have related throughout time, and how I think right now it's a really exciting time to be learning herbal medicine, because we have so much information available to us. And I think, you know, what I've strived to do is really not, I don't want to say create, because it's not like I just made it up, but like really synergize and have a model and approach and a system that can do this. And I think people have been doing this for the last, you know, number of decades. You know, we see back in, you know, the 70s and 80s and 90s, you know, a lot more traditional Chinese medicine being incorporated in with Western herbalism, Ayurveda being incorporated in, you know, using their kind of models and approaches to classify and understand our plants. Of course, their materia medica has been well incorporated. Like, everybody's heard of licorice root. So many people know about ashwagandha these days. We have this global materia medica now. And I feel like for me, my contribution to that integration is really looking at the Western esoteric tradition of alchemy and of medical astrology and bringing that kind of into the fray, so to speak, because these were, you know, throughout the Renaissance era, you know, alchemy was huge. Some of the top thinkers of culture at that day were into alchemy, and a lot of the physicians and herbalists of that day were utilizing medical astrology as an effective tool for diagnosis, for assessment, evaluation, treatment, therapeutics, formulation, that has, you know, I wouldn't say it's been abandoned or forgotten or lost, but definitely shoved into the dusty corners of herbal medicine. And I'm really trying to bring that back and show how, just like TCM, just like Ayurveda, just like Unani, that it is a valid approach to holistically working with people and plants.
I love it, man. I don't think I've ever seen such a wide ranging synthesis. And I'm not a herbalist, but I'm doing my best to pick up all the knowledge I can about it, because someday I want to feel that confidence of being able to interact with whatever I just encounter out in the real world outside, not in this like fake construct we call indoors. So there's a particular segment in your book where you talk about this gnosis cardiaca. I don't know if that's exactly how you pronounce it, but there's a great paragraph here where you say, as we learn to understand the meanings embedded within the forms we perceive, by harmonizing our whole being with them, we establish a feeling connection that is the essence of gnosis cardiaca. Through this perceptual reorientation, the intellect ever so slowly becomes restructured with the symbolic, pattern-based language of the natural world received by the heart. This is the language spoken by herbalists who listened to the plants and followed the light of nature for a very long time, a language we must remember. I think that that is such a succinct paragraph that captures the real essence of why I think this is so important, because it's not, it takes you beyond just knowing the virtues of this or that plant and that intrinsic intuitive ability to commune with them and get that wisdom, but it's also a framework for interacting with all of life, all of the world, that gives you back your true spiritual, like, witness essence that I think that is like what life was meant to be about, the whole point of it. So in the modern world, you brought up how, like, we have this, you know, archive of knowledge at our fingertips with the internet, to the point where it's kind of intimidating how much there is out there to just gather facts about this or that plant, and how many people are using herbal medicine and tinctures and capsules and things, and they don't know what the plant looks like that it came from. I myself can just think of, like, being a kid and watching TV or seeing a cartoon and somebody eats the berries and then they end up being poisoned or something. And so, you know, like, I think what is most important here is in this gnosis cardiaca is, I want to know what you think about how we can learn to interact with nature without the fear of the not knowing. Because I think that's, you know, we see all of this stuff and we're like, oh, that's out there, that's outside, I don't know what that is. And what you're teaching is a way of, by through knowing yourself and the, like, that emanative quality from source, that the archetypes, pattern, everything, both inside of you and outside of you, you know, seeing the outer world is really just a reflection of your inner world and not separate. You know, can you talk more about developing that skill to and trusting that ability? Because I think that's, like, just so awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Wait, I wrote that you read? No, I'm just kidding. I was like, wow, I wrote that? No, this sounds all right. Yeah, that sounds okay. Oh, man. Yeah. Gnosis Cardiaca. So knowledge through the heart. So, you know, this was a lot of that aspect of the book, a lot of the beginning of the book was, you know, essentially a synopsis of my attempt at a synopsis of the work of the late Stephen Herod Buhner. And if you and your listeners aren't familiar with the work of Stephen Buhner, I really recommend it. He's amazing. I think he was one of the modern plant geniuses of our time. And his book, The Secret Teachings of Plants, really goes into all of this in a lot of detail. And it's, you know, it's come under scrutiny by a number of people. A lot of people really say that, you know, the science in there is not accurate, or it's not referenced well, or whatever. I don't know. I think it's pretty well referenced. But anyways, the premise of it is that everything emanates an electromagnetic frequency, and that all electromagnetic frequencies in nature contain information, and that the heart, the human heart, is the largest generator and receiver of electromagnetic wavelengths within the human body, or the greatest oscillator, meaning that the heart has the ability to entrain or synchronize or come into congruency with other electromagnetic fields that it encounters. And so the premise of Gnosis Cardiaca is that this is essentially how human beings can learn about plants from plants, through synchronizing our heart to the electromagnetic field of a plant. And through that synchronization, that there's an exchange of information. It's kind of like, you know, well, boy, a lot of people these days probably don't know what a radio dial is. But, you know, like when I was a kid, you know, you had these little knobs that you turn and you get find your radio station, right? And so you turn in the static, and, you know, it's like, you know, like 99.9 FM or whatever, it's emanating this wavelength, and your radio dial's over here, and you're at like 99.7, 99.6. 99.8, 99.9, and then the fields synchronize, and at that moment your radio picks up on the station signal, right? So it's kind of like our heart is kind of like that radio dial, and we fine tune it in order to synchronize it with another electromagnetic field. So, I mean, Buhner's proposition is that this is how traditional people learned their plants, through non-rational forms of communication, such as feelings, visions, dreams. You know, how many cultures from around the world say they learned about plants, from a dream or from a vision? And this is and I always say it's like an exercise in consciousness, right? Like most of us in this modern world are trained to think really, really well. Our whole educational structure is intellectually driven. We're not taught about feelings. We're not taught that by feeling, I don't mean emotion. I mean the subtlety of and the spectrum of feeling, which is much more subtle and nuanced than the extremity of like emotion, like anger or sadness or things like that. So everything has like this feeling tone of a feeling tonal quality to it. And so the premise of Gnosis Cardiaca is that, you know, we can learn about the plants from the plants. And I think this is a really valid experiential way to build relationships with herbs. But it can also be dangerous. It's really easy for people to mistake their own thoughts, their own ideas, their own whatever, they're themselves, from quote, receiving something from the plant. So it's something that's nuanced and dynamic and challenging, you know, for most modern people to learn how to perceive from the heart and not think, how to be in a state of pure, as you mentioned, witnessing awareness without the presence of thought interfering. It takes a lot of practice, and it's, I think, and like you said, I think it's, it's a way that we, it's not just something you do when you go out in nature or go sit with a plant. It's literally, it's a mode of being that it is, I think, one of the reasons so many people these days are nervous, are anxious, are tense, are depressed, are have a lot of like social anxiety, have all this stuff going on, is because we're all in our heads, man. It's just like we're surrounded by all these, all the static, and we're just, we're inside or we're in our car, we're in artificially artificial environments. And it's like you notice it whenever someone gets out of their car at a trailhead, you know, to go in woods, in the woods. Like, what's the first thing you do? You go, right? You take that deep breath and that sigh. And that's like kind of your nervous system is like unwinding, it's resetting. And you, when we're in a natural environment, naturally our mind slows down. We become more aware of what's going on with our senses, our sense of vision and hearing. And we're aware of more subtleties. You know, a lot of times when people are anxious and depressed and, you know, you go spend a weekend in the woods and they start to feel better. And I think it's just because being in a natural environment helps us get out of that overdrive mental state that so much of us are in these days, glued to our phones, rushing around, running around, stressed out all the time, trying to make ends meet. It's just, there's a lot of health problems we experience these days that are really byproducts of our culture. And I'm, you know, I'm not trying to complain about it. It is what it is. But, you know, I think spending time in natural environments is critical for our health, for our emotional health, our mental health, even our physical health. So, yeah.
This is such a cool topic, man. I've heard it said that we're only as sick as our secrets. And those, you know, things that we hide from ourselves are usually the cause of our illness. Back to the whole witness thing. And I think in a like extended denial existence, that's where people develop stuff like full-on dementia and they're losing track of reality altogether. But what I've seen is that the most like the unhealthy people that I've been around tend to be the most distracted or distractible, you know, like kind of glued to that phone or whatever you want to call it. And I think that there are probably lots of ways to practice this like energetic feeling into things, to know things. I really like the plant to heart connection as you're describing it. To go back to the biofield tuning stuff that I do as an example of like how this has been like my mode for unlocking some of this ability. And I'm kind of curious if I can translate it to plants. Is my most recent client, the very first tuning fork that I hit, and I'm in my living room, they're in another state somewhere, we're on a call, I hit a tuning fork and I immediately was aware that this person had been in a serious head trauma car accident at the age of 20 or 21. So that was an example of what we're talking about, like heart interaction with the field. And then you just know a thing. And that did take practice for me to even, you know, to get the signal, to feel comfortable enough to like blurt it out, because like, what if I'm wrong and all that? But luckily it's a modality where there's maybe not as much risk as if possibly you're going to try nibbling on a leaf that may or may not be great for you, depending on what it is. But I think that there are ways to practice that. And I like the, you know, I think that we sync the radio dial to the radio station metaphorically with intention, asking permission, and then paying attention. And at least with humans, especially permission, but I think that would apply to plants. Is there more you could say about that in the communication with the plants, or other, like maybe other things that can be done to practice the heart-based knowing in a less high stakes way than eating something that you found on the trail?
Yeah. Well, I always talk about like, there's different kind of gateways into the heart, you know, ways that we can slow our minds down to enter more of a state of awareness centered around the heart rather than the mind. So the first is simply breathing and paying attention. This is really like just stuff we, from like anyone that's ever meditated, this is kind of the same thing, right? It's like physical relaxation, paying attention to your breathing, slowing down your breathing. One of the big ones for heart perception is changing kind of your sensory perception. So it's called like soft focused gaze. So rather than like pinpointed, like I'm looking right here, you kind of soften your gaze and now you're actually more aware of things going on in your peripheral vision. I used to really be into like nature awareness and tracking skills and stuff like that. And one of the big guys that has talked about this kind of stuff for a really long time, Tom Brown Jr., he calls it splatter vision, which is kind of a funny name for it, but it's the same thing, right? You're more aware, soft focus gaze.
And so that's another way. Technique, really.
Just being aware of your surroundings. Yes, awareness of your surroundings is key. And if you think about it, like traditional people living out in the woods or in the Amazon or it's like that's survival, right? That's like you have to be aware. Like you don't want to step on a rattlesnake or you don't want to, you know, whatever. You just got to be aware of your surroundings. But I think it also applies to this too. So those are some of the things that I like to do that are just ways of practicing being more aware of your heart and just being paying attention to the subtle impressions of feeling that you get throughout the day is really good. As far as like what you're talking about with like permission and things like that with plants, absolutely. Like I think of plants like people, you know, and it's like you don't meet someone for the first time and be like, tell me your deepest secret, you know, or like reveal your depth and soul to me now. And I think sometimes people do that with plants where they're like, oh, look, it's this medicinal plant. I want to learn about it. And they sit with it. And then they're like, just, you know, expecting this like widescreen surround sound vision of the essence of that herb. And it's like, hey, you just met it. Like, give it some time. Like, so for me, it's like, there's always a process of, like for me, like introducing myself to the plant, telling the plant who I am and why I'm there, making offerings to the plant. You know, we see cross-culturally worldwide, people make offerings to plants, people make offerings to nature, people make offerings to the elements. I have a feeling this is why we see such huge imbalances in nature, is that like no one's making offerings anymore. So for me, that's a big part of working with the plants, is like introducing oneself, talking to it, thinking of it like a person, spending time with it. It's a relationship, right? And relationships take effort and energy and work and time, and commitment. And I feel like those are some of the things that come to mind. Yeah, with that question.
I really like the notion that the imbalance could be because no one's making offerings. I could ponder on that for a while. It's like, of course, balance requires give and take. And if most humans are just on the take mode, then it seems like the world is going to be affected by that because everything is everything.
But absolutely.
While we're in this segment, one thing that I love a lot about your book is the how your holistic evaluation system works. If you were helping someone with a health challenge, you know, there's a few things I would want to ask about that, but I guess let's talk about a holistic evaluation system and then I'll ask my following questions about it. Yeah. Okay. Let's just start with that.
So, just kind of outlining the process of holistic evaluation.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what things are taken into account besides just, I've got a runny nose or, you know, maybe that you would go present to a doctor.
Yeah. So one of the key things with a holistic approach to, I mean, medicine, but in my context, herbalism is, you know, the symptom is a language. This symptom is a communication that something is wrong, oftentimes on a deeper level within the body. So it's really common, you know, in more allopathic medicine, whether that's conventional allopathic medicine or whether that's allopathic herbalism, right? Which there is such a thing. You know, you basically it's the use this herb for that symptom kind of mindset. which works sometimes, but not all the time. So with evaluation, boy, there's a lot involved, especially these days where, you know, you got a lot of really complicated people with complicated health problems. But one of the main things that we're looking for is, what is the underlying pattern in the tissues that's generating that symptom? So, you know, like headaches are a really great example. A headache isn't just a headache. You know, modern medicine is like, oh, there's a headache, take an ibuprofen and your headache goes away. But in more of a traditional approach, people can have headaches for a whole wide range of different reasons and different types. You know, is it an ocular headache behind your eyes? Is it temporal? Is it occipital? Is it vertex? Like, where on your head is that pain? Because different herbs will act on different areas of the head. Is it what we might refer to as an excess type headache, where it's like exploding outwards and the person maybe has like signs of heat. They got like a really red face, red ears, red bloodshot eyes, or are they really pale in the face and everything's like more of a deficiency headache and everything's kind of going inwards rather than exploding outwards? Is there tension? Is there laxity? So, you know, that really changes the approach of what types of herbs that you're administering. So this is a concept we refer to as like constitutional assessment or tissue state assessment, where we're looking at what is the state of the tissue underneath the symptom. So typically what we're looking at is three variables. There would be, what is the quality of temperature? Is it hot or cold? What is the quality of moisture, damp or dry? And then what's the tonal quality of the tissue? I mean, is it like overly constrictive, or is it overly lax or loose? And that really guides remedy selection. Excuse me. Now, that's one major factor in holistic evaluation, and that gets us more specific into what types of remedies will be applicable for that person, not for their disease, not for their condition, but for the person, right? Because when we're holistic, we're treating people. We're not treating a disease. We're treating people. And I think that's a really important mindset shift that's critical for our success. But the other big thing about holistic evaluation is that we're not just tunneling in on the symptom or the disease or even the underlying kind of tissue state pathology, but we're really looking at the whole person. That's why it's called holistic evaluation. We want to understand their life. We want to understand their story. We want to understand what they've been through, what they've struggled with. We want kind of like a whole timeline of what that person's life is like, where they live, what their home life is like, what their family life is like, you know, what the foods they eat. That's a huge one these days. What are they putting into their body? You got to really have a sense for the whole person. And, you know, that can take a lot of time, you know, especially with complicated cases. Sometimes that can take over 2 hours for initial consultation, just to get a really good sense of what's going on for that person. And so, yeah, there's like the process of an interview and intake. But there's also lots of other approaches for getting a glimpse of what's going on inside of the body, whether that's, you know, reading blood work, whether that's assessing the pulse and the tongue, whether that's, for me, utilizing medical astrology as a tool for understanding what's going on in the body. Many people do facial analysis, fingernail analysis. Some people use iridology. There's lots of different techniques for assessing what's going on inside the body. But I think what we see most traditionally used is pulse and tongue is pretty big in most systems of traditional medicine. But the, you know, it's like, it's an interesting process. It's a challenging process. It can get really complicated. It can get really difficult sometimes. It can get really confusing, sometimes working with people that have very complicated health situations going on. So it's like, you're almost like an investigator, you know, like a detective trying to figure out like what's causing this. And I think that's really the main approach, is that we want to find root causes or various roots of that cause. Sometimes it's not always a taproot kind of cause. Sometimes it's a branching rhizome system of causes with multiple contributing factors. So yeah, that's really my take on holistic evaluation, is using a variety of tools to really get a sense for what's going on with that person and what might be making them have the struggles that they're dealing with, and then translating that into what types of remedies we would give, what types of foods they should and usually should not be eating, what types of adjustments they can make in their daily routines, i.e. lifestyle, how to optimize their sleep, how to incorporate more movement, aka exercise. People don't like the word exercise, so I just call it movement. It's like, just move every day somehow. All of these things are what, in my opinion, a good holistic practitioner does. We don't just give, I mean, I remember one thing one of my teachers said, is that, you know, as a holistic herbalist, if the first thing you're thinking of is what herbs to give someone, you've completely overlooked what it means to be holistic. And what he means is you got to look at the fundamentals, like fundamental determinants of health, food, diet, exercise, lifestyle, sleep, all this stuff, our social health, you know, all that stuff plays a really big role.
And that's one of the reasons why I resonated with the book so much, is because that whole person approach, treating people, not symptoms, makes so much sense. And it's where actual lasting change comes from. And yeah, like, for example, a lot of times people have conditioning psychologically from so early in life that it's beyond even their memory capacity in a way. An example would be, maybe somebody, and I've seen, these are things that I've seen personally in my practice, that maybe somebody's born with from a mother who was in her mid 40s when she carried. And so that mother received messaging the entire pregnancy that like expectation to fail or for something to be wrong. And then that individual grows up and then lives an entire life with a lot of problems that stem from always feeling like everyone expects them to fail, and then acting accordingly, shooting themselves in the foot, stuff like that. And or somebody whose mother had a lot of miscarriages before they successfully carried them. That story, you know, they might read about how, oh, the mother's depleted of Jing energy every time they miscarry, and so they expect themselves to be weaker or sickly because of that. And really, the redefining of one's own story, like, you get to decide the meaning in your life, at least on a story level and on a identity level. And, you know, you can help people shift that story to be, instead of I'm a weakling because I came from a low Jing mother, I'm the strong one because I'm the one who made it. You know, things like that can actually bring about big shifts in the person just intrinsically. So where I'm going with this is, I wonder, in that very detailed and sometimes lengthy holistic evaluation process, have you ever seen anybody just kind of get better from the very evaluation itself, helping them kind of see how they're wired and decide to make a different choice about who they are because of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially, like, you know, you got to imagine, you know, someone like me, and I think a lot of herbalists experience this, which is why our work sometimes can be really complicated, is because by the time someone's gotten to you, they've been to an ND, they've been to an MD, they've been to a gastroenterologist, they've been to a neurologist, they've been to an osteopath, they've been to an acupuncturist, right? It's like, and then they're like, none of this has worked. I guess I'll go to the herbalist. You know, maybe they can help me. So a lot of times, by the time they get to you, they're disillusioned. They feel like there might not be any hope for them. They feel frustrated and lost. And sometimes just in the process of doing an intake that in depth, people just find a sense of relief because they're like, wow, like no one has ever even spent this much time with me. And I think for me, like, I genuinely care about people and I want them to feel well. I want them to get well. And I'm really conscious about making sure that the people I'm working with know that and can feel that, right? I'm not just going to be kind of this stiff, cold, rigid, unfeeling clinic, very white coat clinical kind of thing, like where I just look at the clipboard the whole time and don't even look at someone in the eye, which is a lot of people's experience going to the doctor. You know, they're in and out in 10 minutes. They don't even get looked at. It's very, you know, sometimes they don't like feel a lot of compassion and empathy. And so that in and of itself can sometimes be, you know, like obviously not like it's going to heal the root cause of their health problems. But I think if anything, it can instill a degree of hope and faith and trust in the practitioner, in themselves, in the premise that they can get better. You know, there's a lot of coaching that goes involved, that is involved with the process oftentimes, especially when you have to do lifestyle and dietary changes. You know, people usually need some degree of handholding and coaching and help and encouragement and upliftment and, you know, like you can do this kind of moments. But the process in and of itself, yeah, I think is healing in and of itself, if anything, just for someone to tell their story. You know, there's been so many times where in an intake process, you know, a client will be like, wow, like I've never told anyone this before. This has like never come up.
They've never told all the parts of it at once.
Exactly. And so through that, then they start seeing connections and patterns and being like, oh, interesting. My GI issues did show up right after I had pneumonia and had to take a really strong Z-pack of antibiotics or something like that. And they're like, oh, huh. And, you know, and so then they start making connections. And that in and of itself, I think, can be encouraging because they want to understand what the heck is going on with their body. You know, it's like, what is happening? And I think that in and of itself is very helpful for people sometimes. So yeah, I think the process in and of itself is useful. And you know, one thing I wanted to touch on that you were saying that I think is really interesting and kind of really central to my approach to things is, you know, the reframing of things. And like I always say, you know, we all have traumas, you know, to varying degrees. We all have had things happen to us in our lives that, you know, have negatively affected us. You know, for some people, it's, you know, experiencing extreme violence or rape or accidents or abuse. Or for some people, maybe it was that they were like made fun of a bunch on the playground, whatever it is, right? And we can't say my trauma is worse than your trauma or whatever. Like there's sure varying levels of severity, but we have all had something that's affected us, right? And I think a big part of the healing journey is what you were saying is like transforming that rather than being the constant victim to the bad stuff that's happened to us. We have to learn to reorient our perception of it and see how it is ultimately trying to somehow teach us, show us, make us better, make us more compassionate, make us more kind, take that weakness and turn it into strength. This is a big premise of alchemical medicine, right? As poison into medicine. Like that's a practical premise of alchemy, like in laboratory alchemy, right? Where you take very toxic substances like mercury and antimony and turn them into the most powerful medicines. But I think it applies on an inner alchemy level as well. whereby we can transform those traumas into something positive. And that's really a big part of kind of my work in terms of, you know, we're talking about holistic evaluation. You know, the ultimate goal is, after doing all of that stuff, now I kind of step back and I look at that person and think, okay, what are the main kind of archetypal forces that are imbalanced, that are excessive or deficient, whether that's looking at the elements, whether that's looking at the planets, what's kind of the main thematic archetype that is affecting this person, and how can we transform that? How can we turn that from its quote dark side into its light side? How can we bring out more of the virtues of that force through transforming it? And that's a big premise of the alchemical approach to medicine. So,
man, that is great that you finished with that, because it pretty much perfectly sets up what I want to talk about in the second part, which we're about to transition to. But before we do, you want to let everybody know where they can connect with your work and what kind of things you've got on offer for the curious seeker. I know my audience is just going to love this conversation, man. We speak the same language, and your passion for it is real. I totally feel that of, you know, I actually want to help. I actually want to help. I want you to feel like I care. Sometimes being the facilitator for people to heal themselves is almost just as simple as being really persuasive. Can you give people the rounds on where they can go for more of this awesome stuff?
Yeah. Well, we've got our podcast called The Plant Path, YouTube channel, Evolutionary Herbalism. Our website is evolutionaryherbalism.com, and lots of free stuff on there, on our blog, and then video-based stuff. And then, we've got lots of courses that we offer through the School of Evolutionary Herbalism, lots of free, more in-depth workshop series that kind of give a good introduction to some of our course materials. And you just go over there and check out all the goodies that we've got there. We really believe in herbal education being made available to anyone and everyone. So that's why we have a lot for free. But obviously, for people that want to go deeper and kind of level up their skills, we also have, you know, our paid courses. But we do really believe in offering herbal education to anyone that is interested and wants to learn more about it. So yeah, that's where you can find us. We also have a product line of alchemically prepared extracts, which is naturasophiaspagyrics.com, and that's a mouthful, so I'm sure we can maybe have a URL somewhere for that one. Yeah,
right on. Yep, that'll be in the show description. Thanks, Aja, this is great. Can't wait for part two, man.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I know you enjoyed that episode as much as I did. I'm pretty sure this is timeless content right here. Pretty much the exact thing I'm going for when I make episodes is that I intend for as many of them as possible to transcend the date and the place and the chronology that they end up getting released in, and become something that you might return to many years down the road, or share with somebody who's interested in the subject a long time from now. I really appreciate Sage's energy, his professionalism. That's also very, very impressive. We got into this universal truth thing through the lens of herbalism in a way like I don't know that we've ever quite so perfectly encapsulated before. The universal truth idea is what I'm all about trying to find. And typically the tools that I use in that search are philology, you know, the structure and development of languages, relationship between words, etymology, similar thing, being able to pick apart what a word might mean based on its roots or what kind of information that the word conceals. And astrology, of course, is huge, and that comes up in this conversation, and symbolism and wordplay. But what's cool is that nature is full of symbolism. Symbolism isn't just something that we decided on. I mean, yeah, we can use symbolism in a creative way where we come up with an association ourselves as humans. But then there's this also like innate thing to the universe where there's meaning that's already there. So we have this cool interplay in life between deciding what things mean for ourselves, but also recognizing what things mean, like by their natural expression. So I'm really, really excited to be able to get further along in my own understanding of alchemy and of how nature speaks to us through this language of signatures. Really fun stuff. And if you guys didn't catch the second hour of this episode, I do recommend this is definitely one that is worth the $5 on Patreon or joining my Rockfin or my YouTube membership program, because it's like I often say that like we go straight to the deep end, and we did in this conversation, but then in the plus extension, we went into the deep end. So get into the description for the episode if you want to find a link to ways that you can subscribe to Interverse Plus and get the full second hour where we talked about the patterns taught by the alchemical and astrological paradigms. I mean, that's really what part two is about, the deep alchemy. We discussed the connecting of metaphysical concepts to the physical, being able to see why metaphysical ideas exist and getting beyond what a lot of quote metaphysics, especially in the new age, entails, which is like completely unprovable, just total BS as in belief systems about things that have no evidence or provability. But the metaphysics of alchemy have absolute evidence in the plant kingdom more than anything else. I think that's where it's most obvious, especially as we discussed in part two, the threefold pattern, tria prima, you know, that salt, sulfur, mercury. And we discussed mercury as the salvator or symbolic of the savior in human spiritual evolution. We talked about the creation of the pure plant stone and the mysterious power of that. Maybe we're onto the philosopher's stone there. And we talked about how tincturing a plant that is made like in a solvent that's made from its own body that you fermented from the plant itself, how that has a magical power to it. And we discussed how you can use that salt, sulfur, mercury trinity of lenses to apply planetary signatures of plants and, you know, and be able to comprehend what planet does this represent. Very cool. We discussed tropical astrology or sidereal astrology, like which one seems to show up more clearly in herbalism and plant medicine. That's a big question. You know, like it's always like tropical or sidereal, which one's the real one? But if there are signatures, planetary and zodiacal signatures in nature, then maybe we can answer that question of if tropical or sidereal is more accurate by looking at nature through the lens of plants. I like that. I think that was one of the most fire parts of this conversation. And then really interesting, we got into a final tangent about Sage's ideas of how to develop a personal relationship with the luminaries or the planets to be able to have firsthand knowledge of what their qualities are. And so I don't want to tease that too much, but he gave some cool tips about how he did it, which I loved. So if you guys are new to the channel, maybe you're coming over here from the School of Evolutionary Herbalism and you like this type of content, go find, you can just Google it or search on YouTube, my other show, Vibrant, which is on the same channel, the Interverse podcast channel. We have an entire series called Astro Herbalism, where we go through each of the 12 signs and then a couple of bonus ones like Ophiuchus to talk about how specific plants live up to the signatures of the different zodiac signs. And I'm loving that series. I kind of miss it. We already more or less completed it. We might find more ways to bring it back. I'd love to see Seja join me and the rest of the panel that I worked with for that series. Kyle from Tippecanoe Herbs, Michelle Lundquist from Michelle's Healing Home, of course, Slick Dissident, and Mario from Symbolic Studies. It was basically the perfect combination of people to have that series. And that's also timeless wisdom, because not only do you learn about the signatures of the zodiac signs as they apply to the plant kingdom, but also you're going to learn a lot about specific herbs and that could be like a college level course, better than college, honestly, in herbalism. Just go back to it and like maybe revisit the episode for the season that you're in or the ones that call to you based on your own chart. Really, really good stuff. So there's a playlist on my YouTube channel of astro herbalism. I'll link that in the description of this episode too, so it's easy to find. But that's some of the best stuff we've ever done here. I really enjoyed this. I think Sage is a total champion, absolute legend. I wanted to throw at him like some green language about his name. Sage, of course, is like Sage, right? But Popham, P-O-P-H-A-M. Well, Pop could be like father, right? You call your dad Pop, Papa. That's one. And then Ham is darkness. So it could be the sage father of darkness. But I think it's actually more like the word pop in etymology comes from the idea of like pop, like you strike something, you hit it. So maybe he's the sage that is striking at darkness. I like that a lot. And I hope to work with him again someday. I think that we will. We both had a good time. We definitely vibe and resonate together. We're speaking each other's language. So I like when we're able to make a podcast with somebody that's done lots of interviews on, you know, more than they can count on their subject matter, but we bring the fun and we make it interesting to the person. So it's not just rehashing the basics, ground level stuff, but we strike right to the root of what it's all about, the universal truth. So thanks for being on the ride with me and hope you guys are doing well out there riding out the eclipse. This episode is going to release on the day of the eclipse. Extra powerful. And don't forget, there's a lot of ways to support Interverse and really, really support me. I'm the guy. I'm Interverse. Particularly, I think with this episode, you'd have a lot of impetus to go check out Tippecanoe Herbs, linked in the show description of every episode, where Kyle and his family are making some of the best plant medicines around. I use them literally every day. The Interverse coupon code, just one word, is going to get you 10% off and then kick back some support to me, which is an awesome synergistic relationship we have. There's many other ways to support the show with affiliates and stuff that you'll see in the description. And the best thing you can do is to support yourself, get a biofield tuning with yours truly, help me comb out some of the psychological contradictions in your auric field. That's why it says aura technician down here at the bottom. I'm about that. And we're just having amazing results, even potentially above and beyond what some other tuning results seem to be able to accomplish. I had a recent client who had tried tuning with somebody else a bunch of times and didn't get anywhere. And then in one session, we got somewhere. We made a lot of progress. That was super fun. So much love to you guys out there. Thanks for tuning in. Really excited about things that are coming up on the show schedule. And I hope you stay along for the ride with me if you're new to the channel or if you've been here a while. Thanks for supporting, watching, even if it's just the free stuff. I love that you're loving yourself by getting into the most interesting and useful information that is available on the realm. So catch you guys on the next one. Later.